Good morning and welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. My name is Rachel and I'm an alcoholic.
Good morning.
Rachel.
We'll start our meeting with a serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
Preamble of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Welcome to our meeting this morning. We have members of our fellowship in and they'll be sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey in recovery from alcoholism. And to start the sharing off, we have Jane. Jane, would you like to share?
Thank you. My name is Jane. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jane.
I've been asked to come along and talk about my or share my journey with you. I know when I went into the rooms, into the meetings, I at times felt, you know, quite different in the sense that my drinking story, if you like, began much later. There's, you know, many times you hear people starting drinking at 14 or 15. That was not my story at all. So I got through my teens really alcohol free. I wasn't judgmental of my friends that partied away, but I was very sporty and quite disciplined, really. So I couldn't understand how anyone could actually be drunk. I also had a father that was an alcoholic, and I knew I would, or at the time, thought I would never, ever be anything like that. So I grew up in a family that alcohol was an issue with my father and, in fact, with my uncles. That were, you know, it was pretty insidious, really. But we were also brought up in the sense that you never, ever spoke what went on at home. Your family was kind of sacred, and so you never shared anything like that. And plus, I remember when I was older saying to my father, I think you might be an alcoholic, and he said, no, I'm not an alcoholic. So, yeah, that was kind of the how we were sort of brought up, so we just coped with it. So I don't know. I went off to university, got my degree, got various jobs, did very well. But somewhere along the line, I went over the line, I guess. So I loved wine, but I was also very appreciative of wine. My husband and I, we went off to wine appreciation courses 1, 2, and 3, and we had a really extensive cellar, which I was very proud of. And hosted, you know, dinner parties. My work was very much that kind of a scene, but I guess quite controlled. But somewhere along the line, I went over, and the only way how I can describe it is that your focus in the day is purely of when are you going to have that drink. Work-wise, it was pretty easy. I think the higher I got within the area that, or the industry that I was involved with, the earlier the drinks seemed to be, along with lunches. We went on to have a family, and I was, again, quite disciplined in terms of pregnancies and no drinking. But, yeah, as life trucked along, I guess things like wanting to be involved in everything the children did, that was their preschool lives, then on to school, being in PTAs, coaching, head of this, head of that. But in the back of my mind, I always had venues of where we could meet to celebrate, you know, wins or losers or whatever was going on. And that began to become sort of a factor in my planning. It then went on to a few years later, where I was working out if the children had to be dropped off, I would take ownership of doing that sort of thing as long as they could be picked up, because drinking was beginning to impact. You know, I sort of, I guess, had about a 4 or 5 o'clock where I could start drinking, depending on what was happening with the evening. Then I began to hide alcohol, and I thought, I knew that wasn't a great thing, but on the other flip side, I thought, well, what's the point of me keeping it in the fridge, because then I just get growled at with how much alcohol I drink. So I started to hide. And You know, one of the most annoying things as the children got older and the marriage actually we ended up going our different ways, is they would find the alcohol, and that was really, really annoying. It was demoralizing, but also it was holier than thou. I'd have all these excuses, including, I think, one time having a bottle of wine in my tennis carrying bag that I can't remember what excuse I came up with, but we're actually pretty clever alcoholics. We come up with extraordinary reasons and rationales of why we have alcohol where it shouldn't be. It got worse insofar as that morning as I would wake up, I couldn't quite remember where I'd put the bottle or stashed it. And that would send me into a bit of a frenzy because, one, I didn't want to be found out, and also that there was sacred alcohol in that bottle. And so it was kind of like a witch hunt, trying to, you know, track down bottles. It started to affect, I was working as well when the children were a bit older, and so decision-making that I was obviously making weren't good calls. I was asked out one evening to be a mediator in a meeting, and I turned up completely and utterly totaled. I spent a lot of time talking to the family dog, and because there's still clarity with areas of that meeting, I still didn't think I really had a problem. I just thought I'd drunk too much, but there were people within the work environment who pulled me aside and said, "Are you okay?" To which, of course, I was horrified. Of course I was fine, and I drove home. Obviously, this particular issue went higher, and I had to go to the board. But I came up with an amazing alibi, which was to do with, you know, how bad, how hard life was for me, and you know, the marriage breaking down. And they were actually more relieved the fact that I wasn't taking drugs. They in fact, one of them said, "Thank God you're just drinking." I was given support from a advisory service for coping with hardship and stress. And that was, she was a very, very kind psychologist, but I was able to navigate my way out of that quite easily with, you know, a whole lot of excuses and reasons for drinking, and it actually wasn't that bad. It just got horrendously worse where police were involved, DICs, and my whole morale, I guess. But the turning point was I woke up one morning and I just thought, I cannot cope. A couple of years previously, the family had taken me into a treatment centre, which was just a joke. But I knew 2 years down the track from there that nothing in my doing or being or power was going to beat whatever was going on. So it was an amazing 1 month of restoring and getting to know myself, and that was really the beginning of my whole introduction to AA life. I remember, I think the first night we were there or the second night, just feeling so sick with the thought that I realised that this treatment centre went to AA meetings, and I thought, I've got to check out of here. I can't cope. I saw AA as not comedy sitcom, but stuff that I'd watched on TV or movies, you know, just a bunch of drunks. I guess I saw it as like a cult type following. However, I was very, very open, and I think that I had what we call the gift of desperation, and that completely opens you up with, well, I've got to go to everything, and you learn about being humble but also being open-minded, and, you know, and to be honest with you, 3.5 years ago, that was my my start, and I have been sober ever since. It is a miracle. It's the most wonderful feeling, one of being honest, being able to wake up in the morning without a hangover, to be focused, not going looking in the rubbish bin to look for pizza boxes, you know, that the children had ordered in from the night before, not trying to think where the hell I'd actually parked the car from the night before, the lying, but also just the huge this feeling of freedom. And peace, and it's absolutely magic. So when they talk about a life that you've never known before, or that you might have known when you were very much younger, you get it back. You get it back tenfold. So I'm very, very grateful. So thank you for having me, Rachel.
Thanks, Jane. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. The next person to share is Ash.
Good morning. I'm Ash, an alcoholic.
Hi, Ash. Hi.
And thanks for inviting for me to share my story. I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to be sober today. I'm grateful for the AA recovery as well. And this is one of the gifts of recovery, that I'm actually here on a Saturday morning sharing my story and not in bed hungover and trying to piece out what I had done the night before. I'll start my journey in my early days of drinking. My first experience with alcohol was in university, so I didn't start drinking until quite late, and for a very long time I considered myself a social drinker. But I remember my first drink, when I was at the age of about 22, was apple cider. And somebody said, try apple cider because it's not as disgusting as other things. And I had it, and I felt it was disgusting. But a few minutes later, I loved the effects. And it's the first time I had that effect. And that's how my friendship with alcohol began. And it was mostly the weekends. But alcohol made me feel joyful. It made me feel, 7 foot. It made me confident with boys and girls alike. And so that's how, it began with fun. And as life went on, there was fun with a few problems. In my last 4 or 5 years was just problems with my alcohol. I'll just go very briefly about the effects of alcohol. I mean, we are all listening here because we identify at some extent as being an alcoholics. My first drinking started off after work. I'm in the medical profession, and then one night I just came back after doing a 12-hour shift, and I had some whiskey that's been been left around for 6 months. I had it opening for some guests, and I thought it would be a great idea just to actually have that. And I had a couple of glasses, and all the stresses and the worries that I had on my mind just disappeared, and I loved that feeling. And that started off 6 years ago as a regular drinking. And that's where it escalated from. In a very short time from there, I substituted alcohol for a lot of things that I was doing. My running, my walks with my dogs, gardening. It was just the alcohol was slowly taking over the joys, the small joys that I was enjoying prior to that. That ended up having my first DRC, and after that, that introduced me to the rooms of the AA. I went to AA screaming, kicking, and saying that this is not for me. I saw what AA was like in the movies, and for me, I had such a strong judgment about alcoholics that I just could not bear myself saying that I am an alcoholic. I said I was an alcoholic, but I never admitted it. And what I did find, though, that it gave me excuse to go tell people around me that I'm an alcoholic, and therefore my behavior was excused. I remember coming hungover in the morning and weekends, and my wife would say, "What's wrong?" And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I'm an alcoholic. I can't help this." And that's how my loss of the trust my wife had in me slowly started. After my second DRC, after having issues with alcohol at home as well, instead of actually doing something about alcohol, I actually started hiding it. As Jane said, sort of hiding it around the house, hiding in the toilets, hiding it in the car, hiding in the garage. And hiding and drinking and pretending to the outside world, who were by now quite aware of my drinking, that I was doing right. My wife asked me to leave, and even then, my drinking didn't stop. I stopped for a few months. I went to AA. But I never got it. People around me kept on saying, "Hey, listen, you need to be honest, willing, and open." And I said, "Well, I am. I am an alcoholic, and I'm willing to do anything as to sort of Hit my hands on the floor every morning when I woke up hungover, saying, listen, this is the last time I will never drink here again. It had to come to a moment of sheer hopelessness and desperation before I finally admitted to myself that I'm an alcoholic. And it was hard. I was afraid and it was quite uncomfortable, but now I realize I had to actually be at that state to do what I had to do, which was to make a choice to change. I used to read the big book, the Alcoholic Anonymous big book, and I used to be such a stubborn alcoholic that I used to actually go out and actually challenge everything in the book itself. Like, you know, don't take your first drink. I used to take my first drink and wake up with a blackout. It's like, well, I won't do that again. I didn't have a sponsor for a very long time. The key to the recovery was not attending lots and lots of meetings, was to actually follow the steps. And over the last 3 years, there was a series of relapses whereby I fell on my knees, but God gave me the opportunity to rise up and a lesson to be learned from there. And slowly, I started believing in a higher power as well. I came into the program an agnostic. I had God, but I never could trust my God or hand over my God. I knew that God existed. And now the integral part of me staying sober is my relationship with my higher power, is to realize that my life run on my will is a disaster. I will relapse and I will face the perils and the consequences of my alcohol alone. But when I have my God and my God's will and my life is in my God's hands, I find that recovery is much easier. There's less struggle. I listen to my sponsor. I attend the meetings. And things that were suggested by the big book and the people that were before me, the old timers, that's where the knowledge lies. I identified with a lot of alcoholics that I can't, but together we can. And that's how my recovery has stayed. I've got a lot of lessons that I've learned, and time's too short that I can put them all in this talk. But now, if you are struggling, read the big book, get a sponsor, and I found it the really hard way that recovery. My recovery is doing the steps, is the actions, and most of all, doing it for self. Everything that I've put in front of my recovery, my career, my family, is my friends have basically been lost. I've got a new life now, a life that God has intended for me. Not what I want, is what God has for me. Thanks.
Thanks, Ash. You're with Alcoholics Anonymous on 104.6 Planet FM. We have members of our fellowship in this morning, and they're sharing their experience, strength and hope about their journey of recovery from alcoholism. And the last person to share this morning is Jo.
Hi, I'm Jo. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jo.
Morning. I'm grateful to be here this morning. One thing that I was told when I came into the rooms of AA was to put a sock in my mouth and open my ears. And when I finally managed to do that, I heard other people share their stories, and I heard my story. And when I heard my story, I finally felt like I belonged, that I wasn't alone. And I had spent 8 years trying to get recovery or some kind of peace with this disease that I've got, alcoholism. And I didn't want to believe that I was an alcoholic. I wanted to be a special alcoholic, one that could just not drink and do nothing else. So I became a chronic relapser, and I would sober up for a few months, and always my goal was to try and get back everything that I'd lost. And I now, being in the rooms, I have a program that I live by where I have a new life, and I don't have to try and get back everything I lost anymore. I'm creating a new life for myself, and I just do that on a day-to-day basis. I don't have to worry about not drinking for the rest of my life. I just have to not pick up a drink today, and that's what this program has taught me. My drinking started, you know, like it was real, you know, in my teens, university, I considered myself to be a normal drinker. A lot of binge drinking in those days, you know, Friday was the day, and quite often I'd drink Friday, Saturday night. But I'd also always recover for Monday, and I wouldn't dream of drinking during the week or anything like that. Drinking was normal in my family. There was an alcoholic, a history of alcoholism in my family, and I didn't even think about that growing up. I just wasn't going to be anything like that. And I had a really, on the outside, happy life. I had a career. I had two beautiful children and a wonderful family. And but there was always something missing, and I was always searching. And I could never figure out why. I never felt like I belonged. I could never figure out why I didn't feel connected. I was never present in life. I was always looking for something to fill that hole, to make me happy. And it was always extrinsic things. I had to be in a relationship, and alcohol was fantastic. I could have a relationship with alcohol anytime, and it would fill that hole until the next morning, when I would wake up always, you know, with the hangover. And my drinking didn't really progress, I guess, until my marriage broke up in my early 30s. And I'd also suffered an eating disorder in my, you know, from my late teens right through. And I've found it's quite common for an eating disorder to morph into alcoholism, which it did for me. I didn't drink while I was pregnant with my children. And when I came through those pregnancies, the eating disorder didn't actually come back. But what came back was I found that alcohol, at a certain time of day, about 5 o'clock, of course, a couple of glasses of wine would take away the stress of looking after toddlers, and it would fill my appetite, so I wouldn't have to eat as much. So that's how it started, and it just progressed from there quite quickly. By the time I was in my late 30s, the evidence was there. People were starting to, my partner at the time was starting to say, you know, you've got to stop drinking. My actions and behaviours had changed. I was drinking. I started to think, if people are wanting me to stop drinking, then I've got to start to hide the evidence. So I started to hide the evidence everywhere. And then, like Jane was sharing, I couldn't find the evidence in the morning because I couldn't remember where I'd put it. Drink driving, I've been a precipitous drunk driver, and it's just by the grace of God that I haven't managed to hurt someone else while I've been on the road. And those are just the yets that I haven't managed to get to in my journey, and I hope never to. And, you know, in the end, I wasn't looking for a drink in the morning to find out where I put my stash. My body actually physically needed to drink to function. I became a non-functioning alcoholic. And so I sought help, and I did go to a treatment centre, but I wasn't ready. I wasn't open-minded. I wasn't teachable. So then I began just the process of becoming sober for periods of time and then relapsing. And then what happened to me early last year was I had a massive relapse and was hospitalised more than once. And I became so powerless and so unable to know what to do with myself anymore. The only thing I could really do was surrender. And I met my sponsor who 12-stepped me, which means she approached me and asked me if I needed maybe to go to AA. So I started going to AA, and after a couple of weeks of kind of kicking and screaming to go in there because I didn't really want to go, I just wanted to go to AA and get the answer. You know, tell me how to stop drinking. and I'll go on my merry way. And the thing that was the problem with me is I kept doing the same thing over and over again and getting the same result, and that's the insanity of alcoholism. That's what I did. In the big book that we read, there's a story about the jaywalker that walks out in front of the car, and then he ends up in hospital, gets mended, and then he goes and does the same thing again and again. To change my life, I really needed to start using the pedestrian crossing instead. And that's, I guess, what I did. I stopped trying to do things my way. When things were suggested to me by people that had been cleaner and soberer than me, I started doing them, even when I didn't really want to. And it worked. It started to work. And I did go to a treatment centre. And at the treatment centre, I got to hear the impact of my drinking and the devastation that I caused my family, you know, the people that I loved. And today, you know, my amends to the people that I love is that I live a life where I'm clean and I'm sober, and I just every day I just know that nothing will get that bad again, that I will need to pick up a drink, not in this 24 hours, because I've got a program and I've got people that I can talk to. And I learnt in my treatment centre how to have respect for myself again, and how to love myself again, and how to deal with that guilt and shame that I have been carrying around, which was so painful. And now that I've been able to let go of that, I find that because I can connect with myself again, I'm able to connect with other people. And that has been the most amazing gift that I could hope for. And my life's not perfect today, but I wouldn't change it for anything, because I know that if I keep doing what's suggested to me in these rooms in AA, that I have the opportunity to be a successful, happy, contributing member to society. And I have my children back in my life, my family are in my life. And I have those qualities that I lost, just to be reliable, trustworthy, and to be a decent person. So anybody out there that is wanting to give AA a go, it's once you get through those doors and you hear a few stories similar to your own, you know, I hope that you would feel that connection and just keep coming back, because that's all I did in the beginning. I just kept coming back until I started to get it. And I'm really grateful. AA has saved my life today.
Thank you, Joe. That brings us towards the end of our meeting. If you've been listening and identified with our speakers and you'd like to do something about your drinking, you can log on to aa.org.nz, and in the drop-down box under meetings lists, there's a list of all meetings in the Greater Auckland area and right throughout the country. You can also phone 0800 AA Works, and this will put you in contact with an AA member in your local area. We'll be back here next Sunday at 10:45 on 104.6 Planet FM with Alcoholics Anonymous AA meeting on air. And we'll close our meeting with the Serenity Prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.